Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
And now, for the first time, it is my privilege to introduce you, the lucky listener, to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson, Barton Simmons, my co-host right there. Barton, I am fired up for this. We have a rockin' intro. We've got the big voice that announces us. Dog, we are so official right now.
Dude, you're coming with the heat right from day one. I love the energy. I'm ready to roll. The brass section in our intro gets me so fired up. Let's talk some football, man. It's about that time. It's just exciting to be at the time of year where we can actually start digging into this stuff, and it matters.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have for you in this episode the SEC West win totals. They are the Las Vegas numbers of the number of wins at the end of the season. We are going to go through and we're going to break them down. We're not just going to give you our over-under predictions, but also some of the big things that stand out as we are here, like media day season just about to unfurl. But before we get into that, we have, in my opinion, one of the foremost experts in the entire country, forget it, the entire world, when it comes to the recruiting scene. And it's one of the fun things that we do. Barton and I have done a lot of work. I'm sure you've seen it. College Football Rundown, any of the SEC Live stuff on CBS Sports Digital. I know that you know this so well. So you just got back from the opening. And the opening is out in Oregon, one of the biggest recruiting weekends. And the buzz name is quarterback Justin Fields. And I'm hearing a lot of big talk coming out, which, you know, whoever the top prospect is, you know, whether it's Rashawn Gary, you know, whoever is like top quarterback prospect, top defensive line prospect, everyone gets excited. So I'm immediately intrigued. And Barton, the other reason I'm intrigued is because this is a five-star quarterback who is, according to the 24/7 Sports crystal ball projections, just talking to all the big dogs, you know, just feeling it out. So that means we're going to have all those fan bases talking about Justin Fields all through the fall until he finally puts pen to paper on National Signing Day. So, dog, like, okay, the first claim that I need you to sort of unpack for the audience, is this the best quarterback that they've seen at the opening?
Chip, look, I know this is show number one, and I don't want to come off as hyperbole guy. You know, that's not me, but this is the rare instance when this kid is, in my opinion, I just watched the best quarterback performance in a camp setting that I've ever seen since I've been doing this, and that's 10 plus years. The opening is held in conjunction with the Elite 11. And, you know, so I've seen all these Elite 11 guys come through. I saw the year where Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen and that loaded class came through. I saw the year where Jameis Winston just came out guns blazing. This is the best showing I've ever seen. I mean, this kid was unreal. He was, you know, just in total control the whole time. Here's a good sort of way to articulate just how good he was. So there's 12 quarterbacks out there. They split these guys up into 7-on-7 teams. And Justin Fields' team won the championship over the course of this pool play, basically 2 days of pool play and tournament play. Justin had 16 touchdowns and zero interceptions over the course of the weekend.
Against the best defensive, like against some of the like top talent in secondary.
Exactly. Best players in the country and a bunch of offensive guys that he's never played with. They're playing with this offensive system. They you know, this isn't just sort of drawing plays up in sand. Like, they actually, you know, have learned this system, have progressions they're supposed to go through, have reads they're supposed to be looking at. So he's got this new system with a bunch of new receivers. He scores on 16 out of 23 offensive possessions. Whew. So that's about 70%, right?
Yeah.
And just to give you an idea, if you total up the 11 other quarterbacks there, and averaged out their scoring percentage on the drives that they were under center, the average is about 29%. So just blew the competition out of the water. And you know, you kind of alluded to it, the crystal ball's all over the place. Like, this is that rare occasion. I mean, so often now that the big time quarterbacks, they get committed early and they start recruiting for the team and they're locked in. We've got a kid uncommitted, former Penn State commit, decommitted. He's out of the state of Georgia. We've now got potentially, and I won't spoil it because we still got some decision to make on the rankings, but potentially the number one player in America at the quarterback position, uncommitted, with Florida yeah. State, Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, all the big dogs chasing him. So, I mean, if you're one like that's in the recruiting drama, man, this kid has got as much drama as we've seen this late in the process at the quarterback position as you're going to find. I mean, this has got all the makings of just being somebody that I think goes to college and wins somebody a national championship. I couldn't be more impressed with Justin Fields over the weekend.
Yeah, it's like, that's because, I mean, as me, the interested fan, and a lot of times for the, like, a lot of my ankles and elbows are so deep in the current depth chart that I do almost get that fan perspective. And so it's like, ooh, Justin Fields, ooh, okay. You start to check him out, and then all of a sudden you just see, hey, like you said, I mean, just right from the deepest talent pocket of the country geographically, and then to have all of the big names out there. I mean, this is going to be somebody fans are going crazy for. The question is, two things. First, logistically, is he going to carry this out to February, or is he? Do you know what his schedule is? Yeah. For making a commitment. And number two, I think you might have just answered it, though. Like, this is, for real, a program-changing quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, the first part of that is, I mean, right now it looks like the plan was to get a decision squared away by the end of the summer. But, look, at this point, I think anything's possible, because after what he just did out at the opening, like, it – every college that's recruiting him that's anywhere remotely close to in the race is going to make his decision to say no to them so, so hard. I mean, he is about to get recruiting turned up to a whole nother level, because if you think about some of the schools recruiting him, first of all, you got Georgia, who can't afford to let this guy out of the state because he's going to just rip them apart wherever he goes. And they offered a couple of guys before him, so they sort of screwed up if they let him go. Then you got Florida, who's just desperate for a quarterback, and this is a guy that they've absolutely put all their chips forward for. Auburn, same. We've seen what they look like without a quarterback. Yeah. They got Jarrett Stidham this year. You know, we'll talk about them a little later, I'm sure. But you know, if they can get Justin Fields to sort of circle back and you know, backfill that quarterback position, I think he's a first year starter. So it, you know, point being, this guy is such a big time recruit, and yes, I think he is a game changing recruit. You know, if you're, I mean, a program changing recruit, I think he is someone that can start from day one. I think there's probably two quarterbacks in this class that I feel confident saying that about, him being one of them. And man, it's going to be, and right now no one knows where he's going is the other factor. So I mean, it really is up in the air. It really is, you know, a flip of the coin right now. So it's going to be a blast to figure this out and watch it play out.
What is what are some other names or players that stood out to you? Barton, by the way, does have over on 24/7 Sports the dream team, like best at every position from what you saw. Who are some of the players either on that list or elsewhere that really impressed you during your time over there out in Oregon?
Well, one guy, you know, remember Justin Fields was committed to Penn State, and just because they got in there early and no one else realized how good he was, and then you know, he's down there in SEC country, so people sort of tempted him away from that commitment. But on his 7-on-7 team, he was throwing to Justin Shorter, who's out of New Jersey, who's committed to Penn State. And I'm telling you what, Penn State fans have got to be crying, you know, into their beers right now, because Justin Shorter and Justin Fields looked like an unbelievable combo. I mean, those guys were on point. Justin Shorter is this huge 6'4". 4.5 40 receiver who's just was probably the most physical, tough to defend guy out there. I thought he was phenomenal, and the wide receiver group was really, really good. And just as we're sort of on SEC day, you know, another guy that impressed me was Jaren Williams, who's a quarterback committed to Kentucky. You know, right now, if you just look at recruiting, Kentucky's got the best quarterback in the SEC East committed in this 2018 class. And he's a pretty good one, and Jaren Williams, another guy out of the state of Georgia. So that's one. If they hang on to him, and if, say, Justin Fields ends up at Florida State, that's a pretty big win for Kentucky, because that means they probably get out of this recruiting cycle with the best quarterback in the SEC East. And that's, you know, if you got that kind of a talent, that can turn things around for you pretty quickly.
I tell you what, Kentucky lines up with Kroger, and everybody's coming for all the BOGO deals.
No doubt.
And this is just all working out for Big Blue Nation. Very cool stuff. All right, we've got win totals. The numbers that we are going to use are set by the South Point Sportsbook. I'm sure that in the next coming month or so, we will see those start to update all the way running up to the start of the college football season. We are going to begin in the SEC West, and we are going to begin with a team that until this moment, I thought did not bleed.
Watson. Touchdown!
It was 31-28. Alabama had it locked up. They had survived the injury to Bo Scarborough. Jalen Hurts had darted towards the end zone. And the long marathon of a national championship game was concluded. And for the first time, Nick Saban had lost in a national championship game. Barton, let's just, before we get into the number, which, by the way, is 10.5 on the over-under, I made the claim earlier this summer. I'd like to pitch it at you. There in the last 5 years have been very few where I felt pretty confident about the distance that Alabama has created, not only between itself and the rest of the SEC West, but maybe even the entire SEC.
Yeah, I mean, look, Alabama, I thought this past year was one of the best defenses I've ever seen. I thought the way they've been recruiting has been just otherworldly. I mean, they've been unreal on the recruiting trail, and that's why they're so good, and that's why right now, you know, they've got 5 stars sitting on the bench just itching to get on the field. And you know, the difference with that Clemson thing is they had the quarterback in Deshaun Watson that was just, you could win a game with, and you could just roll out the football on any field and have a great shot, and they just ultimately outscored Alabama. And that brings me, I think, to this year's team. Like, the thing that I really like about Alabama this year's team is that, you know, the game has changed to where to win a national title, you've got to be able to outscore people. I mean, these offenses are just so tough to defend. There's so many, you know, all the RPO stuff gives the offense such an advantage. And now with all these quarterbacks that are so athletic, again, it's just, if you got a Deshaun Watson, I don't care how good your defense is, you got a chance. Or how good the defense you're playing is, you got a chance. And
if you're going to have 90 plays in a game, the superior quarterback is going to have a good shot to lead his team to victory.
For sure, yeah. And I mean, that's ultimately what happened. And that's why I look at this Alabama team. And in some ways, I mean, it's crazy to say it, but in some ways, this is a team that could be even more equipped to win it than last year's team. In some ways, I think this could even be in a better team. And I mean, Nick Saban keeps on topping himself, but I mean, I'll cut to it with I'm taking the over at 10.5 with Alabama, and for me, and knowing these guys from a recruiting standpoint and seeing what's coming on the roster, I mean, I think this is the best offensive, the most talented group of offensive personnel Nick Saban's ever had.
Wow. All right. So, I mean,
you tell me, you look at the backfield, look at the quarterback position, look at the wide receivers. Like, am I wrong? Like that, I'm blown away by the guys they're about to trot out there.
The SEC Offensive Player of the Year is back at quarterback after having another year to mature as a football player and human being. I said, like, I don't know about you, But the time between my freshman and my sophomore year was great learning experiences, both in the classroom when I was there and outside. I mean, there is human growth that takes place during these years. And Jalen Hurts was one of the best offensive threats last year. You mentioned the backfield, Bo Scarborough, fully unleashed back, but like the whole backfield is good. Calvin Ridley is still there. And this guy who I really want to get your opinion on, like Jerry Jeudy's legit. Like that wasn't a spring game sideshow, right? Like we are going to see him absolutely torch some teams this year.
Yeah, I mean he's the same. I said this when he was coming out. I said he's the next Calvin Ridley and Amari Cooper in the sense of this like just super smooth, polished, competitive receiver out of South Florida, and he'd come in ready to roll and he looked great in the spring game. But Chip, what's crazy is I don't think he's the best freshman wide receiver they've got coming in.
I think
they've got two guys better than him coming in. and now those guys may not play as much day one because they weren't early enrollees. And Jerry Jeudy's a little more polished than them. But Henry Ruggs and Devontae Smith were guys I think that are better. So, I mean, that's just, you know, you got those guys. You got all that backfield with all those starters returning. Plus Najee Harris, who was, and some people thought, the number one recruit in the country, who was really good in the spring game too. Their offensive line is, you know, again, they got Jonah Williams, who may have been their best offensive lineman last year as a freshman. It's just scary. And then you got an offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, who actually sort of brings a system in that fits that personnel. It's not, I mean, you know, Nick Saban got all huffy and puffy about, you know, the ball control comparison to the NFL when some reporter asked him about it. But that it's true. I mean, this guy brings in, you know, wide open passing offense and, you know, and he's got the pieces to put that together. So look, you know, 12 regular season games, at least one postseason game. If you're on the low side, I mean, just who are they going to lose to?
Look, I mean,
you can find two losses maybe, but who are they going to lose to?
There is no way, in my opinion, Alabama loses two regular season games. And
agreed.
The only way that this could go south, which brings us to our next team, because I'm also going over, the only way this goes south is if that one loss comes in Jordan-Hare Stadium at the end of the season. But that means it's been a hell of a season for Auburn.
And, right.
I mean, Auburn's got to play Clemson in week two. Don't sleep on Georgia Southern in week one. Auburn over under set at 9. I'm looking at this team and there are reasons to get as an Auburn. Like I understand the excitement if you're an Auburn fan, because the last time that you had a transfer quarterback come in and you had the Georgia and Alabama games at home at the end of the season, a lot of wild stuff happened, and you made it to the national championship game and almost went and won that thing. So I get, especially given what we have seen, maybe probably a little bit of game action, but for Jarrett Stidham, and you probably remember from the recruiting process, like the Jarrett Stidham excitement, the idea that he can be the dual threat quarterback that can make this thing go, because you still got Cameron Petway, you still got Kerryon Johnson, you still got a lot of pieces from a very solid offensive line. Like when you're doing the recipe for an explosive and good Gus Malzahn offense, all you really need is the trigger man at this point. But like Stidham is, in your opinion, is he a great talent? Or is he going to be someone who is a good fit? Like more better talent or good fit?
Bro, I ranked Jarrett Stidham coming out of high school as the number one quarterback in that class. That's the Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold class that was like loaded with talent.
Wow.
And I thought he was the best coming out. And he had a pretty good showing as a true freshman thrown into the fire at Baylor after Seth Russell got hurt. So, I mean, I think he's special. And now here's my fear on Auburn. My fear is I got bamboozled by Jeremy Johnson. Like I was one of the guys that got sucked into that. I thought he was pretty good coming out of high school. I thought that they had a chance to be pretty good that year. I thought Jeremy Johnson was, you know, he was good in relief the year before. So, like, guilty, like, I'll take my medicine. Like, I'm one of those guys. So, like, the only thing I'm worried about here is this just another, you know, get your hopes up about Auburn and then be disappointed? But I believe in them on paper. I mean, they've got a great offensive line. All those running backs are back. The receivers should be improved with a quarterback that can get it to them. And while they lose some guys on defense, man, Marlon Davidson, it was about as good as, you know, he was just one step below, a small step below the Ed Olivers and, you know, Rashawn Gary's and Dexter Lawrence's of that class last year. I mean, he's the truth. And so I think this defense is good. I mean, I feel pretty good about the over here. I just like Auburn and I love Jarrett Stidham. So, you know, I'm a little scared I'm going to look like one of these, like, you know, gambling rookies that just bets the over every game. But I kind of think the SEC's got a chance to be pretty good, and Auburn is a big reason why.
Man, shooters got to shoot, Barton. And we've got to, like, this. Our job is to have takes. You know, they don't need to be flaming hot takes, but we got to have takes. You know, people are subscribing to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast for opinion. Do not feel too bad, but I appreciate the way that you are willing to admit defeat. And as you know, I'm more than willing to show the egg on my face, and we will see that week in and week out as we make our against the spread picks and locks and all that good fun for the season, where I'm sure we'll have perfect records, right? Like, we'll just be nothing but master lock against the spread picks here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
We're just tasked with making the people money. So, you know, as long as they're in the plus, as long as they're in the black, I'll feel good about it.
What do we know about Chip Lindsey, the new offensive coordinator at Auburn? Because I got frustrated that a lot of lip service and time and print was spent. And again, this does not mean that it is not an important storyline, but it's just what sometimes I think that fan bases get really fixated on things that are just wildly out of their control, and who's calling the plays and the play calling order on game day. Very important. I get it, but I felt like we spent too much time between Gus Malzahn and Rhett Lashley talking about who was calling the plays. And then after Chip Lindsey is hired away from Arizona State, he was a former Auburn staffer for Gus Malzahn, I think in 2013. Like, Gus is like, oh, but Chip's got full, he gets to call all the plays. Like, what is your read on the situation in the offensive office over there at Auburn?
You know, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I'm hearing what you're hearing. I'm hearing what they're saying. I think the other thing was there was all this sort of talk that they wanted Gus Malzahn to hire somebody outside the Gus Malzahn tree to, like, give him some fresh eyes. And then all of a sudden it's Chip Lindsey. And so, you know, I don't know what to make about anything that comes out of Auburn. But I do think that Chip Lindsey is a really good coach. You know, I talked to the father of Brady White, who was a quarterback over there at Arizona State, one of several that played and has dealt with some injuries, but he played for Chip. And, you know, Brady's dad was telling me that, like, of the coaches that he's worked with, Chip is very quarterback focused. Like, he's a guy that what are you seeing? Like, he's, you know, he is in the quarterback's head. He's constantly communicating with them, and he really liked him. Like, Brady really liked him and was really impressed by him. And so I think this is a guy that's going to come in and I think command some respect in that quarterback room. I mean, he's a confident coach. He's got great personality. I think he's going to be successful there, especially because he's got the quarterback that I believe in. And so I really think, you know, whether I don't know that he's the missing piece more so than Jarrett Stidham's the missing piece, but I think them coming together is a nice culmination here for Gus Malzahn to really get things rolling. I believe in the squad. I think they got a chance to be really good.
One of the names that I've been using when I get peppered in interviews and questions from fans, they're always, you know, come June or July. Like, give me a name that I don't necessarily know that I'm going to be hearing a lot. And almost always, one of the first ones for me is LSU running back Darius Geis. Barton, LSU's over-under on the regular season wins is set at 9. I don't think the schedule sets up particularly well for 10, you know, particularly when we're right. already taking the overs for Alabama and Auburn. 9 might be a pretty good number, but I think Darius Geis is going to be one of the SEC's superstars this fall.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm with you on the number too. Like 9 feels right. 9 feels like what it's going to be. So I'm at this sort of push to over edge right now with LSU. And it's, you know, Geis is what's going to stir the drink there. I mean, Geis is, I think that this year's college football running back class is better than the NFL draft running back class. You know, basically Darius Geis, Saquon Barkley, Nick Chubb, like, I think those guys are better than the big three from this past year. And Geis, I think, could be the best of the bunch. I mean, he is a total freak. I think he's a better college back than even Leonard Fournette.
I think that the production of Leonard Fournette in his time at LSU never lived up to the legend. You know,
right?
Like we had Booga Nation. We had everything about his recruitment. We had so much excitement. There were bursts. You know, we got the sickest highlight reel ever of him just burying Texas A&M defenders into the ground, and it was like in spurts everything that we had hoped for. But I think over the course of his career with the Tigers, I just don't think that Leonard Fournette the player lived up to the legend of Leonard Fournette. And you got to think that the way he played or did not play against Alabama certainly played a role in that. And I don't know if Darius Geis is going to have a leg up there, but I think particularly paired with Matt Canada, after seeing what he did with a stable full of backs and some good offensive linemen at Pitt a year ago, I think the production is going to lap Leonard Fournette.
Well, it's so funny. Like, people, you almost feel a little bit sheepish saying it, or like embarrassed to make the statement like, oh, I think he's better than Leonard Fournette, because there's just such this folklore around Leonard Fournette that you feel like it's heresy
right.
to somehow make that statement. But Geis he's a more versatile guy. He's a better pass catcher. He's got almost as many records as Leonard Fournette does in LSU history, the running back position, by playing starting 6 games, 7 games.
Yeah.
So I'm okay going ahead and saying that. A and B, I agree that Matt Canada is a great fit for him. But also, you know, Matt Canada, if you look at what he did, like at Pitt, he likes to spread the ball around. He's not just gonna, you know, we saw with Cam Cameron and Les Miles, Leonard Fournette, they just fed him, just, you know, off tackle right, off tackle left, just feed the beast. And I think they're going to be a little bit more judicious about the way they give the ball to Geis. They're going to try to get a lot more guys' touches. You know, Matt Canada loves the jet sweep game. He's going to get receivers carries. So I think Geis is going to get the ball in more creative ways. So to me, this season hinges on, you know, how good is Matt Canada? And I think he's really good. Like, I think he's one of the best in the country. And how much can he help the growth of Danny Etling? Because ultimately, I still think that, you know, this is a big-time defense, and I think Dave Aranda is one of the best there is. But I don't know that Ed Orgeron's going to, like, win them games as a coach. And it's all about, ultimately, can Dan Etling be more than just serviceable? Like, can he improve to above average in the SEC? I think that's sort of the difference in this, you know, this team.
Ah, do you think he can? I would gladly be proven wrong. This is episode one. We got to start getting takes. But Danny Etling is a reason why I am not thinking that LSU wins 10 games.
I mean, when you look at Danny Etling's at times last season, I mean, it was such an improvement from what they'd had at quarterback. Like, it really was better. But then you lined up LSU against Alabama, and they may have won that game if they could have gotten anything out of the quarterback position. That was the game that Danny Etling looked wide-eyed and scared, and you can't have a quarterback wide-eyed and scared against Alabama. And so that is, you know, he's got to wipe that out and be a somebody that sort of isn't just trying to hand the ball to his running back and survive. He's got to try to be a guy that thinks he can win a big game like that. And I don't know if that's in him, but I think that Matt Canada could potentially sort of insert some confidence, instill some confidence in him just based on the way that offense ticks. Because everything out of LSU, I know that it was ugly in the spring game, but everything out of LSU is saying that they were rolling in the spring, before the spring game. Offense was beating the defense. So, you know, there may be something there. We'll just have to kind of wait and see. But I do like the pieces that they've got. And you know, it's just all eyes once again at the quarterback.
LSU started last season with Les Miles as the head coach. Obviously, Ed Orgeron takes over as the interim, ends up getting the job full time. Texas A&M. Is Kevin Sumlin still the head coach on January 1?
Well, A&M is – I'm finally ready to kind of go with an under.
Yeah.
I mean, when I look at what's our number at here?
Seven and a half. Yeah. 7.5 is tough. He can't have another 8-win season. You know, that's the thing is when you look at the time – at Texas A&M, when you look at the investment that has been made by Texas A&M since that incredible start with Johnny Manziel, and then you see that since Manziel left, it just has been the inability to get to 9 wins, just sort of floundering around in the, like, they can't even go to the deep end. Like, sure, they're not in the baby pool, but, you know, they're not able to touch in the deep waters right now in the SEC West.
They aren't, and I mean, this year, this is going to be the year where, you know, for so long, Kevin Sumlin's been trying to find a defense to match up with his offense. And, you know, he hired John Chavis and defense improved. And now we're at the point where I think the defense has got to carry them. I mean, I don't have a ton of confidence. I have very little confidence, frankly, in the quarterback play. I mean, I saw Kellen Mond, the true freshman, coming in. He's not going to be ready. I'm just telling you, he's not going to be ready. Nick Starkle, the redshirt freshman, I mean, that's going to be your guy more than likely.
Ugh.
And I just don't see it. I don't see it in him being – he could develop into a good quarterback, but year one as a starter, I don't see them getting out of the rugged SEC West.
Now,
he doesn't even have quite the array of weapons.
Yeah.
Around him. It's just, it's hard for me to see A&M get to 8. It's just hard for me to see it. And if they don't do it, that so to answer your initial question,
no.
I mean, I think Kevin Sumlin's the guy to keep an eye on for failing to return.
Travion Williams is a good back. I don't know if he is a carry the offense back.
Right. I'm with you. He's like a guy that's a great option to
great
that,
yeah. Great at that, great, yeah. At being change of pace, counterpunch, great extra weapon. But man, they lost so many targets. Oh man, that's
Christian Kirk is gonna have to win the Heisman. Like, he's gonna have to score on punt returns, kickoff returns, jet sweeps, bubble screens, and fade routes. Like, he's gonna have to get it all over the field. And I mean, you know, they lose 19 sacks along the way. I mean, this is another, like, the defense just comes back with no questions. I mean, I think the defense is going to be probably even improved from last year, but it's not. I just don't see this defense being Alabama or even LSU.
Yeah.
So there's, I just, you know, I've got my doubts when I looked at those totals for the SEC West. That's the one that jumped out, and I said, okay, you know, that's, something's got to give here in the SEC West.
All right. Arkansas, Just really the biggest story for Arkansas is sort of the burning topic that is really on the mind when you consider this team going into next season. Raleigh Williams III was one of the best running backs in the SEC. Another neck injury, the second of his career with the Razorbacks, knocks him out. He is forced to retire. He is, by all accounts, very good dude and will remain in football. Some NFL teams have reached out to him so that he can remain around the sport in other ways. But we've got like a very interesting season. Like, we're Texas A&M. I'm looking at Kevin Sumlin, and I'm not seeing the pieces that give me a lot of encouragement. Brett Bielema, correct me if you think differently, but maybe not carrying the same amount of pressure, but certainly some skepticism. Just sort of the, listen, all these coaches that we're about to get to now are making over $4 million a season, and none of these coaches, with the exception of Gus Malzahn, have been able to displace Alabama from their spot at the top of the division. I really, really like Devoy Whaley, the rising sophomore, going to be a sophomore coming out of Texas. He played a little bit last year. Austin Allen, like, he's all right. He can be pretty good. Arkansas's over-under is set at 6. Where are you at with the Razorbacks, sort of, first of all, just in general, under Brett Bielema? Like, what, when you're thinking about them, when you're out on the recruiting trail, like, what is their identity right now?
That's the question, Chip. Like,
nobody knows.
That's what I was going to – I mean, so what is their identity? I mean, so Brett Bielema came into Arkansas, and they were just, you know, pound them into a pulp, physical, like they were going to be – the team that could withstand Alabama and dish it out themselves. And it looked like they had a chance to grow into that. But, I mean, I've got some numbers here. I mean, so Brett Bielema's first year, they allowed 8 sacks all year. They passed it 49% of the times. They ran more than they passed. Next 2 years, 14 sacks, 55% passing, 65% passing. And then last year, 35 sacks, and they threw it 60% of the time. So again, who are they? Like, are they this team that's going to just pound you to death? Or are they this team that's going to throw it around and have the quarterback running for his life? I've lost who they are. Now it's, you know, losing a running back this year again hurts, but Devoy Whaley's pretty good. They get just about their whole offensive line back. So maybe that they can improve and start getting back to their roots. I do like Austin Allen. I think he's one of the, you know, I think a top tier quarterback, maybe a tier two quarterback nationally. I think he's really good if he can just get some protection. But, you know, he loses 6 of his top 7 wide receivers. I mean, I just think this is another one of those teams where they're probably pretty good, but they're in the SEC West, and as you mentioned, like there's only so many wins to go around, and especially for a bunch of $4 million coaches, nobody wants to be that team pulling up the rear. I mean, the number feels about right. 6 feels about right. Like I think this feels like a 7-6 season to me. So it's not like I think Arkansas is going to be bad, but again, I don't know that this is a team that all of a sudden flips the switch and starts really contending in the SEC West. And, you know, it felt like Arkansas had a chance to get to that point at the very early stages of the Brett Bielema tenure. And I feel like now I don't know about you, but it just sort of feels a little bit plateaued at this point.
Yeah, I think this particular Arkansas team is not going to be the one that causes a lot of consternation among Arkansas fans when it comes to Brett Bielema. That day might be in the near future, because it's not like I'm seeing some signs of a trajectory to the top of the division. But I also think this team is dangerous enough to like beat Auburn, which can like buy him a year or something that. Like, you know, they could lose to Missouri and beat Auburn. You know, that's
sort of what Arkansas's been too. Like, that's maybe their identity, is just the team that, I mean, can play Alabama into the fourth quarter and give them a scare when they're, you know, looking past to LSU or something. And I agree. I mean, I think and I do think this is kind of that year where Brett Bielema is on the hot seat at all. But this might be the year that sort of warms things up for 2018.
Yeah, the Belt Bowl felt like a great encapsulation of Arkansas football. They can pound you into the ground 24-0 in the first half and get goose-egged 35-0 in the second to lose the game.
Right.
But, all right, Ole Miss, self-imposed bowl ban, NCAA investigations, 5.5 is the number here. So we already know they're not going to be in the postseason. You've still got Shea Patterson, you know, one of the top quarterback talents in the conference. But man, Barton, it is tough for me to think that when it comes to late October and November, that the motivation factor, especially after seeing the way that the bottom started to fall out for Ole Miss a little bit in 2016, it is very hard for me to feel very confident about the Rebels. And I don't know if I don't know if that's me just putting too much, you know, other stuff, like me not looking at the player personnel closely enough, where they have been recruiting pretty well, obviously. And this is me not considering
maybe part of the problem.
This is me not considering Hugh Freeze as an offensive coach, particularly given Shea Patterson. But I feel like Ole Miss is going to put up some big numbers and lose games.
I can see that. I could definitely see that. This is a tough. So I also think with Ole Miss, I think there's still a factor left to be determined, in that if the Ole Miss or if the NCAA just drops the guillotine on them and just hammers them, I could see, you know, what is Hugh Freeze in trouble? Is their leader kind of in doubt? Like, is the just disappointment around the program going to, you know, increase and sort of encapsulate this team? Or is the penalties, like, I could see the flip side too, where they got penalties, they can't play in the postseason, but you know what, they're going to circle the wagons and they're going to be and they're going to find a way and just live for each other. And I know Hugh Freeze is going to preach that message, but you know, I just wonder if things come down harder than people expect, whether that will be a harder sell on these guys. That's sort of the intangible stuff that you got to think about. But to me, on the field, this is a really intriguing team and a team I kind of like.
Ooh.
I mean, they have the best pass game personnel, some of the best pass game personnel in the country. Their wide receivers are stupid good. Like, they're ridiculous. Shea Patterson could be one of the real, like, national names in college football this year if he can just sort of, you know, cut out the mistakes late in the year that he showed and zero in on the successes he had, which were significant given the circumstances he was thrown into. They got to find a run game. That was a big problem last year. But I do think, like, if you look at their offensive line, three of their starters were five-star offensive linemen coming out of high school, ranked by 24/7 Sports. Now, we were probably wrong on two of them, honestly.
Yeah.
But still, that just gives you an idea of the talent that's there, of what they can be. I think the potential is there on the offensive line. So I think they've got guys there. Their defensive line is still really good. Marquise Haynes is still one of the best pass rushers in the country. So there's just a lot about this Ole Miss team that's really intriguing. I can see them, you know, losing some shootouts. I can also see them being one of the rare teams that could beat Alabama. I'm in this weird place with Ole Miss to where I could see the bottom fall out and them giving up on the season, but I could also see them rallying the troops and getting 7 or 8 wins.
Mm.
I'm sort of reluctantly picking the over, but I understand how dangerous it is, and I think that this could go dramatically either way.
Mississippi State, their Egg Bowl rivals, South Point, not loving this Bulldogs team, setting the over-under at 5. I am 100% in, to the point of making like fallacy choices on Nick
yes.
Fitzgerald. Like, I love this kid, man. I just think he's so perfect for what Dan Mullen has constructed You know, we mentioned RPO, the run pass option game. I mean, Fitzgerald's as long as his body can hold up, like they can put basketball scores on the scoreboard on teams. And I like this Mississippi State team way more than I should.
Look, here we've been in the office just to get ready for football season, and we've just been doing some like pick the schedule basically. I just for a team every day, just pick their schedule, pick their record at the end of the year. 5 wins is what Vegas is saying. I picked 9-3. Like I love Mississippi State. Like
yes.
I really, really think they can be good. I mean, you said everything. I mean, I don't need to say any more about Nick Fitzgerald. You hit that. I agree he's got to stay healthy because behind him, all they've got is a true freshman quarterback that's talented but not ready for the SEC yet. But I think their wide receivers, Donald Gray, Memphis native, big-time athletes. I think he's got the explosiveness that they need. You know, they've got a potential first-round draft pick at left tackle. Their defense is, I think, stacked. I mean, Leo Lewis, as a redshirt freshman, was flashed every time he turned on Mississippi State last year. Jeffrey Simmons, as a true freshman, was flashing consistently too. They got so much length in the linebacking core. They're so athletic on the back end. They've got Mississippi State has this way of getting these JUCO guys or these sort of no-name Mississippi kids, and they do such a good job developing them. So I think that there's not a lot of household names on this team, but there's a bunch of guys that are ready to take that next step. I just think Mississippi State, you talk about games Alabama can lose, and Ole Miss, I think it may be a reach. I could see Mississippi State beating Alabama a home game. Like that's the type of team Alabama could lose to because they have an athletic quarterback that can sort of even the playing field. They've got a physical defense. It'll be a home game. That's one Alabama I think has to keep an eye on. I don't know, man. Like, am I crazy? Like, where do you have them? I feel like they could be really good.
I don't have them higher than 7. I've got Mississippi State, definite bowl team, like so much confidence in the bowl team, and probably could be able to get to 7. But all right, so we're going to do for our next episode, we'll be doing the SEC East, like Mississippi State, Kentucky. Like, you ready for the 5-hour game? This puppy's going to be wide open, and I don't know who wins that.
Yeah. But, you know, part of the reason I like Mississippi State is it just feels like it's a Dan Mullen team.
Mm.
It fits him. They're gritty.
I like
it. They got their athletic quarterback. There's just something about this squad that feels like it fits the teams that have been successful with Dan Mullen. And, you know, there's some. So I guess that's just sort of my, hey, someone's going to surprise some people. And I would have been, I feel like the Vegas number should have been more like 7.5 than 5. And I just, you know, maybe I'm off, but I just can't see them missing a bowl.
Awesome. He is Barton Simmons. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. Man, episode 1 in the bag. We're going to be coming at you next with the SEC East win totals. Barton, thank you so much.
See you, brother.